Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Cindy DeFerdinand, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron along with Cindy DeFerdinand.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Well,
It's Tuesday. We have a great guest on today. Excited about. She should be calling in shortly. We're going to have Valerie Morbelt, who is the founder of A Joyful Life and a coach. And she deals in the area of self-inflicted unhappiness. And she will be talking about finding her way from misery to joy, sharing her story, and how she's committed to taking people through this evolution to joy much quicker than she had to journey through.
Hello.
Hey, Valerie. I just was introducing you. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. And this is Bruce, Bruce Cameron, co-host for today. Thanks for coming on the show. We so appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
You probably missed your introduction, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm explaining that you are the founder of A Joyful Life, and you deal in the area of self-inflicted unhappiness and how you are committed to taking people through the evolution to a joyful life more quickly. And so maybe we could start a little bit, and Bruce, please jump in as we go along with questions as well. As Valerie, tell us a little bit about, your journey, so a little bit about your background professionally, and then your journey into coaching and your own personal story that led you to that.
Okay. Well, most of my working life has been surrounded in the military. I was active duty Air Force for several years and a reservist for several years. Then I married an active duty Air Force person. And I've worked for the Department of Defense off and on for 20 years.
Nice.
My background in as far as coaching, about in 2007, I read a book called Your Best Life Now. And before then, I was really a miserable person. I was miserably unhappy. I was not a very nice person. I didn't really appreciate that there could be joy in life. And so I just led a life that was basically crappy.
And tell us a little bit about how that was prior to 2007 for you.
I was just miserable. I was on the search for happiness because I knew I was miserable, but I didn't know how to get to the happiness. I didn't want to do anything that included having fun, not even with my husband or my daughter. I just wanted to wallow in my own unhappiness and misery.
So, and like self-pity.
Self-pity. I was deep in self-pity. Deep.
No fun,
I don't
fun,
think
right?
I could have dug myself any deeper. No, absolutely. No fun at all. But I didn't really, at the time, I don't think I realized I was missing out on such a joy of what life could be.
Could be. And what were you going to say, Bruce?
I was going to say, when you were in that misery, were you kind of victim stancing and blaming others and
absolutely.
That other stuff?
It wasn't my fault. Of course it wasn't my fault.
Never is, right?
No, everyone mistreated me. Woe is me. I was unhappy because my husband didn't make me happy, or I was unhappy because I didn't live in the house I wanted. I'm sorry?
Bruce, did you have a question?
No, I didn't have a question. No, that sounds, I worked for the Department of Justice, so. You know, DOD, DOJ, there's always a reason to be unhappy, and disgruntled. So I just figured I'd throw that in there, you know.
Yes. You guys have some connection there for sure.
Yeah, I was the queen of unhappy for years and years and years. I can't even tell you how far back because I can't remember. Up until 2007, I can't really remember, other than the getting married to my husband and the birth of my daughter. I couldn't really remember real happiness.
Any cycle then. That you really felt like you were, you know, in the zone and living the right life.
No.
And never.
Absolutely
so,
not.
And what about, because I mean, the reason I'm asking questions and kind of we're stopping you here is, I think the listeners are going to resonate that there's a lot of people who get caught up in what I would call self-pity and negativity. Now, it may be a cycle of their life or circumstance that they have to work through, but some people live there, and it sounds like you were living there for a very long time.
Oh, definitely. Permanent residence for a good while.
Permanent residence. And so what was the effect on you and then the people like your close circle, your family, your close friends? Can you tell us a little bit about
that?
What?
Really, I think my health suffered for sure.
Ooh, interesting.
I heard a long time ago where if you break the word disease down, it's really broken into dis-ease. And dis-ease in your spirit, in your mind, in who your life can create disease. So I was chronically run down, just didn't feel good most of the time.
So it really affected your day-to-day, how you felt physically.
It did. It really, really did. And of course, when you're misery, a lot of people cover their misery up with food because we self-soothe with food. So
yes,
I ate
absolutely.
Terrible things. Just, yeah, not good.
Yeah. And I deal with that.
Yeah,
a lot. Because it sedates you. It definitely sedates you.
Oh, yeah. It numbs you. So as far as my friends and family, nobody wanted to be around me. And truthfully, looking back, I can't blame them. I wouldn't have wanted to be around that person either. But my husband and daughter were stuck with me because they didn't have a choice. But I think the people who I really stuck by me, even though I was in misery, I think they did it because they loved me, not because they liked me at the time.
Okay. Yeah. So they just sort of detached and distanced themselves as much as possible. Could you feel that at the time? Were you aware of that?
I don't really think I could feel it or was aware of it because I can't explain to you how unhappy I was. And so this sounds crazy, but I think I was narcissistically unhappy. It was all about me, all about my unhappiness. And I just couldn't see anybody else or anything else.
Doesn't sound like fun.
No, it wasn't. It really wasn't.
So tell us a little bit about what led up to 2007 and that change, or was it a spontaneous thing?
It wasn't spontaneous, but it was very close. In 2007, I knew that in early 2007, I felt like I really need a change. I don't know didn't at the time know what the change was. So I kind of set myself on a little mission to figure out what was wrong and then try to figure out how to fix it. And I had been watching television, and there was a televangelist or whatever you want to call him on. His name is Joel Osteen. And at the end of his sermon, and it was all about happiness. He was the happiest person I think I'd ever seen at the time. On TV, on his show, he just was really, really happy. And at the end of the show, they were promoting his book, Your Best Life Now. And so I purchased that book and I read it in a number of days. And I really think my life changed probably 2 days into the book. The more I read, the more I went, oh my gosh, I'm so much more in control of what's going on with me than I ever realized. I can make a change. I get to choose to be happy. I get to choose to not be this unhappy person who can't see the positives in anybody or anything. Mm. And it really, not overnight, but kind of overnight, changed my life for the better.
So that was the trigger. That was the beginning of the change.
It was.
Reading that book.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. Nice.
It was.
And sounds
I'm
like
thankful
a great
to
book.
That book every day. It is. I highly recommended it. It was so good. After I read it, I bought 10 books and I gave them away to anybody who even showed a tiny bit of interest in the book.
Did you introduce it that I notice you're miserable and in self-pity and this may help?
People actually noticed that I was happier. They were like, oh, what's going
something's
on
changed.
With you? You seem like you're happier. And I said, you know what? I read this book and I said, I have an extra copy. I kept copies in my car and I said, I have an extra copy if you'd like to read it.
You know, I've had that experience before where people are so moved by a book that they buy copies and pass them out, which is kind of cool. So, Bruce, are you familiar with that book? I haven't read it.
Yeah,
although
I
do know Joel Osteen, and I do like the positivity message that they, him and his wife do put out there. It's kind of contagious. You know what I mean?
It is. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's cool. That's really cool. So from that point of reading the book and really it changing you, what was your process from that point forward?
So I really became a student of living a better life. I read more books. I talked to people who I found to be really seemed to me to portray a person that I wanted to emulate some of their what they embodied, happiness, joy, positivity. I surrounded myself with people who were positive and encouraged me to be more positive. I read a lot. I read a lot of books. I watched, I had always been what people would think a typical Christian was, but I look back on it and I was pretending to be a Christian. I was pretending to be I thought that a person who followed a particular religion was, but I was not really.
You weren't
because
feeling
a person
it.
That lived in that kind of misery couldn't possibly follow something that is supposed to be positive.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. So you sort of had a slow growth change and you built on it. How long did that take for you to get to the place where you felt like you were living that happy, joyful life?
I would say 6 or 7 years. And
ooh, that's a long time.
It was a long time. And I think that had I known what a life coach was and had I known how a life coach could guide a person to see more clearly, to reach for or lean toward a more whatever goal they're reaching for, I think it could have been a year, could have been a year and a half. It wouldn't have had to take 6 years for me to get to a point where I just wake up every day thankful, happy, never a bad day. There are bad moments. Everybody has bad moments, but I just don't really have bad days.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So no matter what the circumstances have rolled your way since this change and evolution, you really day to day, stay in the positive.
I do. I make it a point to be positive. It doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter what happens. We all have things that happen in our lives. There are things that that are more positive or more negative. I just choose to live on the side of the positive. And I'll give you an example right now. I have my older sister has been diagnosed with a form of bone cancer. And
ooh, that's serious. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm upset about it. I'm sad about it. But she's still alive. She still gets an opportunity to fight for her life. And that's the positive part of it. We still can work towards her
Recovery, yeah.
Surviving this.
Mm-hmm.
She can survive this. So that's the part I look at. I don't look at the sad part of it because we still have her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you try to stay in the positivity no matter what the circumstance is.
Yes.
And that's a tough circumstance.
I choose joy. I choose joy over depression or over sadness and all of it. I just choose joy.
Now, there's something you have said to me in the past that a lot of unhappiness is, and Bruce, you probably can relate to this, not you personally because you're so positive, but people you've worked with, the self-inflicted unhappiness. Can we discuss that a little bit?
Sure. I think self-inflicted unhappiness, which is why I was unhappy for so long, is because you don't choose to put yourself in a better light or put yourself in a better situation. You just live the victim mentality. And I think mm-hmm. if you don't bring yourself out of that victim mentality or the woe is me mentality, you're choosing to be unhappy and miserable. Okay. I chose not to do it any longer. So I 100% believe it's a choice.
Okay. So if
sometimes
it's a choice,
you don't know how to get through it though.
Right. Well, and that's where the coaching comes in. Like you said, if you had known about coaching sooner, the process could have been quicker, and that's what you bring to your clients. But it
yes.
starts, to me, it sounds like you're saying it all starts with a choice. You know, I can choose to stay in the victim negative mentality position, or I can choose to find positivity in any situation and choose to be happy today.
Yes, that's exactly okay. what I'm saying.
Now, Bruce, in your past, you've definitely dealt with a lot of this, correct?
Right.
Was there things, I was just curious, you know, were there things, tools that you had in your toolbox to deal with that type of
sure,
personality?
Yeah. Yeah, use that, you know, basically cognitive behavioral therapy techniques, you know, I mean, recognizing that it is a choice and that if you can change how you think about something or how you perceive something, right, then you can change not only your feelings, you can also change your actions. And so the whole idea, right, behind cognitive behavioral techniques is to kind of notice, you know, changing how you think about a situation, problem, something that was a crisis might now be an opportunity, or something that was a crisis might now be a challenge. Depending on that. So I have a executive client right now that is going through some hearings right now and was extremely stressed out in the prep for these hearings. He was testifying for a week-long case. It was a multi-billion dollar thing. And I kind of told him, and he said, you know, you were right. You know, he said, I can hope for the best, but I had to plan for the middle. You know, and I let them catastrophize on paper. And what's the worst thing? And what's the worst thing?
The worst case scenario is a good thing.
But
play through.
But it did kind of come through into the middle. So anyway.
I like that. The middle road, right, Valerie? Mm-hmm. Like there is a middle, but even in a terrible situation, you know, sometimes, you know, people, and I'm one of those people that has that philosophy that, you know, there are cycles in life that are difficult. There's, you know, things are thrown at us. And but if we're looking for the silver lining, maybe not in the midst of it, but after you pass through it, you always can look back and say, this is what I've learned. And I try to use that as a positive reinforcement to push through a difficult time, because always some growth and some good things come out of it.
Definitely. I always try to make myself think, you know, you're not where you were. You can go further, but you're not where you were. So right here is good for now, but you have to reach for what is better to come.
Oh, I like that.
If it's a hard task, a hard point of your life, we all go through seasons of life where there's a struggle. But if you are reaching for the better, you never have to remain in wherever you are in the struggle.
I like what you said. You're not where you were. So even when you go through hardship, you know, if you're somewhere along the continuum, maybe you're, you know, halfway through or three quarters through, you're not at the beginning of the crisis. That's a really good, that's exactly. A simplistic, that's what I love about you, Valerie. You make things that are very, very hard and complex, very, very, very simple and understandable. And I think that your audience, your client base, the people you speak to, it's easy to relate to. Your story is very, very relatable. Very simplistically relatable. You know, you were miserable. You happened to read a book. I mean, that shit like that happens, right? You know, a book can change your life. Meeting this the right person, you know, an event can certainly change your life. And then that, to me, that is hope for anybody out there who finds himself in a miserable lifestyle or mindset that, you know, you never know what's going to happen or who you're going to meet or a book you're going to read or a movie you're going to see. And it can shift you, you know, that shift can happen. And yours sounded like kind of a slow grow change. And so tell us a little bit, once you made the change and how you found, and I know you have, you know, the military background and a little bit about what you're currently doing and what led you, how you found the field of coaching.
Okay. So about 2011, I was searching on Google for other books to read. And I had put in, I can't remember what the keywords, but it was something like, growth or development, and the words life coach kept popping up. And I was like, what is this thing about a life coach? So I researched life coaching, did a little bit more. And there was a local life coach who really, she didn't concentrate on helping military or ex-military or military spouses, but her practice had quite a few military spouses. And, she offered me a complimentary session, and after the first session, I was like, I needed you years ago. If I had had her, you know, all those years ago, I could have really gotten rid of all of, not all of my baggage, but a lot of the baggage that I had been working through for several years, I could have done it much faster. And after I worked with her for several months, she's asked me if I had ever considered life coaching. And I was like, no, I just needed a coach to help me get to this next point. And she said, I think you should really, really consider it. And she sent me an email with one of my certifications is through Coach U. And it was, she sent me a Coach U fast track information. And I read up on it, and it took me almost a year to make the decision to actually go to life coach training. And the crazy things that I learned once I did go to life coach training is after I had met Susan, which was the coach's name, and was really making even bigger strides and living a more joyful and happy life, I had really subconsciously started coaching people but didn't know I was coaching people. So I probably coached people a couple of years off and on before I met Susan and even after I met Susan, but not knowing that I was coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I attended Coach U's Fast Track, and I started, the instructor or facilitator started going through, you know, these are parts of what we do in coaching. I was said to myself, this is what I have done for a little while. And it sort of a bell went off and I realized this is what I'm supposed to do in my life. I'm supposed to give to the universe the blessings and the really wonderful things that I have gotten from my transition from being miserable to joyful.
Nice, nice. So it was like it clicked for you in that first training.
It did. It really, really did click. And I've taken several trainings since then. I attended a refresher training. I think it was just maybe 8 or 10 months ago with the Life Coach Institute of Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I'm always a student of life coaching. Even though I'm a coach, I still am a student because there's just
we're
so much
always
more
learning
that I can learn to help everybody out, to help those who I think who come to me for, you know, guidance and encouragement and accountability.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of your journey, obviously you have a special skill set in terms of, you know, well, you did the training to become a coach, but also knowing your journey, you're way sensitive, I would imagine, to people who are stuck there in that miserable spot and can't seem to move.
Yeah, I am. And I'm sensitive to it. I'm compassionate towards it. And I can see myself in a lot of people that I talk to, and I work through helping them reach a joyful life as well.
That's nice. That's nice. Everybody needs to be happier, right? So one thing that that I do, you know, and, you know, all of us as coaches, I mean, Bruce, you know, you and I talk all the time. I mean, it's such an amazing experience to see people stuck or in a bad situation or feel miserable or not getting what they want out of life or not doing what they want to be doing personally or professionally, and then finding them, you know, moving through that and the joy they find in that movement and their aha moments. It's just really fulfilling. I mean, it's great to see people push through and get their life in a better place. One thing that I know about you, Valerie, is, and Bruce, I know this about Bruce as well, so I think there'll be another connection here, is you like the hard questions, taking people right up to the edge is one of your styles.
I do. I do. And I actually say ahead of time, when a client is, you know, a possible client is interviewing me, I say, I am one of those very direct people. I'm very, very direct. And I will say, you have to be prepared for me to challenge you. You have to be, because you wouldn't be coming to me for what I can offer you if it all was going well. So I will challenge you to push yourself past where you think you can go. I'm pushed a lot. I have a mentor coach and I have a peer coach in my life, and they both bring me challenges, but I think it just makes us better. I think it allows us to, sometimes I think it gives us permission to reach for something that we may not have had the courage to do, to reach
right.
for.
And the confidence. Bruce,
yes.
Did you have something, Bruce?
No, I didn't. I'm just listening. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know Bruce is a take somebody right up to the edge, right, Bruce?
Yeah, and the reason why that is that there's been a problem. I mean, I come into the situation most of the time because there's an identified problem going on with some pretty grim consequences. If the problem doesn't remit or get resolved. So, so at least the good news on my end is that, you know, my clients see that coming, versus that's an option. With the straight life coaching case, it might be a little bit more of a, ooh, I wasn't anticipating, you know, this level of rigor. But it's some of these executive, coaching engagements, it's got to go down hard and fast, and we got to get real pretty quick and get on track.
Right, right. Which is fun, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I like that. You know, it's just my nature to be a problem solver. I'm retired from the Justice Department, and there was always a problem. You know what I mean? And if it didn't remit, we put the cuffs on, and off they went. But so it's a real. It kind of fits in with my personality real well, and but also is really good for my client, and also good for their stakeholders.
Yeah, let's talk. Like, it might be a good time to talk about some of the hard questions that you might put out there to people. You know, somebody who's stuck, somebody who's miserable, trying to get them to wake up a little bit, or put their little tootsies to the fire, you know?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, what are some of the things you might ask, Valerie?
One of the questions I ask pretty early on is, what are you afraid of?
Well, that's a good one, yeah.
I ask that because, just from my own personal experience, I think I was afraid of failing, but I think you fail if you don't try.
Mm-hmm.
I think not trying is the biggest failure that there could be, and just to me personally. So I always ask, what are you afraid of? I'll ask, what do you have to lose?
That's a good one.
You know, in trying to change yourself, change your life, live a more abundant life, what do you have to lose? You have much more to gain than you have to lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people are afraid to change, afraid to move, because they're comfortable where they're at. So it's like, what do you have to lose if you jump off the cliff? And reviewing it with them. And that could lead to like a little bit of what we were referring to earlier, the worst case scenario. What's the worst that can happen? You know, knowing that the worst doesn't rarely happens, but people can stay stuck there. So yeah, that digs at what people are afraid of may also tie into the things that keep them stuck, keep them from moving forward. And sometimes people, I have found in my coaching, a lot of people keep those kind of stuck inside of them. Mm-hmm. You sort of have to crack it open. It's not something they share with others. Bruce, do you find that in your practice? Those things that people are really afraid of become the blocks that keep them from moving forward, and it's not something they verbalize to people.
Right. You know, and just last hour, I'm coaching a college kid, and he needs to successfully complete a foreign language to get his desired degree, right? And so he had to drop the class, and he was catastrophizing. Oh my gosh, I suck at foreign language. That means I can't get a degree. And man, he just went all the way down. Like whoa. Then I really had to stop him. Look at other options. You know, he qualifies for 504, and he qualifies for other, you know, learning disability stuff. And hold on a minute, there's other programs, other schools, other majors. So once he started look at everything from 30,000 feet versus his subjective, you know, moment in time, man. And that's with these young folks, man. They are such a slave to their emotions. Many of them are, you know what I mean? And
it's all they see is the negative. They don't see that there's a way out. They don't look at the options.
Yeah. Just, you have to build resilience. They don't have a lot of coping skills, or just they're not very nimble with their thinking. And so that's, you know, we have to kind of assist them.
Do you think that's just being young? I mean, do you think that's just the inexperience of being younger, or do you see it more today than you saw it 10, 15 years ago in practice?
I see a lot more today. I mean,
okay.
I just think
interesting.
On-demand world and just little patience for anything. I mean, you know, I think it started with the microwave in the 70s, but you know what I mean?
That's funny.
You take that up to the 100th power to where we are today, and you're like, yeah, I hear you. So
everybody wants it right now. No patience.
Yeah, things
right?
Don't come easy. You know, that's why these young kids walk off the job, you know. Well, you know, I had a fight with my manager, so I just quit. This is BS. And man, you know what I mean? It's just to see people walk off even, $100,000 jobs, these millennials. So anyway, don't want to put them under the bus, but it's just the mindset's just a little bit different. Yeah.
Yeah. So it takes time to pull somebody from that mindset. And, one of the things I like what you said, Valerie, is the time it took for you to evolve from miserable to joy, that people who work with a coach can spring forward much quicker. And a lot of people don't understand what coaching is, which is why Bruce and I started the show. Just, you know, every Tuesday at noon, we're putting the word out there. We have different coaches on so that people start understanding what coaching is, what it isn't, and how much it can really spring you forward much quicker you know, than if you were working and sorting things out on your own.
I definitely think that is paramount to how much better my life is today. And I it could have been better years earlier. I didn't have to take so long if I had been aware of the opportunities that a coach could provide you with. And I think a lot of people don't realize that sometimes coaching is long term, but what if you have a specific goal that you want, you just want to achieve one goal? You can have situational coaching, which can move you through wherever you're blocked, or where, you know, you want to go from A to E, but you're stuck at B or C.
Right, right. You just need some support
so
moving through it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
Sometimes coaches just ask the right questions that a person doesn't think to ask themselves.
Mm-hmm. It hasn't occurred to them, right? And if
exactly.
you're stuck in, you know, the mindset of this is too much, or this is too hard, or I can't do it, or, you know, some of those false beliefs that keep you stuck, when you start to try, you get scared and you pull back and it becomes too overwhelming and people stop. Whereas a coach will push you, will hold you accountable, will keep your feet to the fire. And the collaboration and the bond that grows, the two heads are better than one, I always say, really can move somebody forward quicker. So I like that idea of you working with people who are miserable and getting them to happy faster. It feels like, just day to day, there's so many people, I live here in Southern California, you get out on the road and you see it, you know what I mean? Everybody is impatient and in a hurry and they don't seem too happy to me. You know what I mean?
Nope. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. So
I live in Southern California as well. And I notice, especially on the interstate or the freeway, it's called the freeway here. People just, it's really not that serious. Yes, we all have some place to go. We don't have to be there in 5 minutes. It may take us 15 minutes. And the person next to you may have something going on with themselves. But if you can take care of what's going on with you, it makes your life much easier. You can't do anything about the other person's life. But
right.
if you can really sit in a place of joy on a regular basis, your whole life, and people around you see that. And if you're calm and don't engage with the other person on the road, hopefully they will just go on their merry way.
Right.
But you still get to remain in your, where you are. And I think coaching helped me even with just little bitty things like that. Being coached has helped me with just small, subtle changes. The big changes, yes. For sure. But even the little small bits and pieces, it really has helped me in my life.
Yeah, you don't have to let other people's moods affect you. You know, you can let it roll through you and past you. Right?
And that's really common sense, but it's really not so common when you're in yourself and in your pain and in whatever's going on with you.
Right, right. It's hard to roll past it sometimes. So some of those questions you ask and, do you find that your clients, the looks on their faces, do they like, whoa, they've never heard it before, they've never thought of it before?
Sometimes, one of my clients told me, she said, I don't really necessarily want to talk about what I'm afraid of because then I have to address it.
Interesting. Right? Which is the
yeah.
whole point, but so, some people don't want to go there,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. But they, no, because then they have to really open themselves up. They have
vulnerable.
To, crack open all of the little bits.
Right.
I've told a couple of clients to put your fears in boxes. Just imagine that you have some boxes. Put the fears in boxes. You don't have to open all of the boxes at once. You can start at one box and then work your way through.
Nice. That's a good analogy. And a lot of times people are afraid of what they're afraid of because addressing it means work.
It means work. It means mm-hmm. being, like you said just a few seconds ago, vulnerable. It means being honest with yourself.
Yeah, and sometimes they're just not ready. But I love the coaching profession because the people that show up at your door on the other end of the phone, they're ready for some change. I mean, coaching represents change to me. I mean, if you had to pick one word.
Me too. Absolutely, for me.
Yeah. You know, and I know, Bruce, the people that you work with, they have a little bit more motivation to change. But that doesn't necessarily mean they all do, right?
No, I mean, there have – I've had clients that we get to that point. Some people might call that an impasse of sorts. They're like, nope, not going to do that. I'm out of here. I'm quitting. Deuces, you know, they're out of there.
They're not going to do it.
And they roll on to the next thing. And again, when you're working in a structured environment or you're working in a corporation, hey, for your Department of Defense, Department of Justice, or some sort of a very large corporation or partnership, man, there's just going to be things that, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to have to do. And if you don't do them, then you're not going to be working here too long. And sometimes you think you can coach people through something, and you can. Sometimes you can coach them to a point, but they're like, I just I'm not going to use my free will in that other direction. And
right, they're just going to dig their heels in.
Yeah, that's fine, you know. And so there's outplacement work, and there's transition work, and then there's a whole other, you know, several methodologies and paradigms of coaching, you know. Once that person decides to go that other direction, and we go that other direction, you know what I mean? There's no judgment on this end by any means, but just like,
right. It's a choice. Right? It's a choice, right?
Make the most of your choice. So, yeah.
And sometimes the choice is better for them, you know, where it's going to lead them.
Yeah. You know? Sometimes it is.
Sometimes you have to cut bait, right?
And it's better for everybody.
Yeah.
That was in their wake. So yeah, no, you're right. It was spot on. So, you know, the old water seeks its own level thing, and that happens on these exits as well.
Yeah. So in your, you know, Valerie talked about before a little bit about the powerful Black woman and the I meet so many of them in teaching across the country that are just like just power, passion, joy, dancing, singing, just like pushing past obstacles. And I in talking with you, you had a very simplistic way to explain what I see as such an incredible thing in women. And you said, and I'm trying to remember, you're going to have to bring me back to the double, is it coming back?
Double minority.
There you go. Thank you. Overcoming that. Can you point to that a little bit to us in your own life and your own experience?
Sure. So what a double minority is an African-American woman. So you have the minority of being an African-American, but then you're also a woman. So African-American women feel like they have to try and work harder because a lot of times we've run into obstacles where our being female is a problem, but being African American is also a problem. And I haven't encountered it recently in my life, but in my younger years, especially when I was a young airman in the Air Force, I have been told, you're African, boy, you speak well. And I always say, compared to what? Or you're well-spoken. I've been told that a gazillion times. You're well-spoken, and I want to know, compared to what? Everyday American English? But it's, people do not expect a lot of people who are sheltered. I call it sheltered. But
it is sheltered,
really,
right?
Closed-minded.
Yeah.
Sheltered and closed-minded. Don't expect some African-American women to be educated. I have a college degree. They don't expect us to speak English without speaking Ebonics. I try not to speak Ebonics. I do pretty well at it. I just feel like there's a lot of African-American women who took the challenge of really going for what they want and not allowing preconceived ideas and roadblocks to stop them.
which is fabulous. I've been witness to it, and I got to tell you, it's such a joy in my profession as a coach. I'm telling you, it's very inspiring to me, and I appreciate you sharing that with. You're so matter of fact about it, but I love the way you speak to it. It's like rise up. You know, you've had to overcome it, but you've made a decision to succeed and excel. And everybody can relate to that to some degree. I mean, in their lives,
Yes.
You know. In their personal lives and how they relate to other people, you know, you have to admire when somebody chooses to succeed and chooses to be positive despite the obstacles that they have to encounter.
Yes, I agree. I admire. I work with a couple of women who I tell them I want to be like you when I grow up.
Nice,
because they're just. So reaching the top level of their careers, and they're very, very self-confident, and it's something that I think it doesn't matter what your ethnic background is. It's something that you could admire and appreciate.
Absolutely.
And try to emulate. You can't impersonate, you know, just try to make yourself a better person.
Right. And make it authentically yours. Right. Yeah. I love that.
To make it yourself and be authentic about it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also to make sure that it's not coming from a self-centered place. Now I'm going to go on record. You know, I've been to several of these coaching things for Orange County and I do cameo stuff. Right. And I'm noticing some of the black participants kind of going at it and then staying in the Ebonics frame. You know what I mean? I need to do what I need to do by any means necessary. You know what I'm saying? I got to get mine. So I think there's that impressionistic thinking. You know what I mean? That if I do this, people will come. Like, no, man, people aren't going to come. You have to go out there and you're going to have to hustle and you know, and you're really doing this because you want to be with other people, right? Not because you want to get yours. I got to get mine. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. And, you know, one of the things that's true, Bruce, and one of the things that I think I'm by no means the best coach, but I think I'm a pretty darn good coach. And one of the reasons that I think I'm successful is because I love coaching. I love it because it just makes me happy every day. I'm excited when I have a client call. I'm excited when it's almost time for this call to end so I can go on to the next call. So I can, you know, and
it is, it's fabulous.
The pay is good, but it's not, the pay does not make me a coach.
It's how it fills you up.
It is not.
Isn't it how it
fills
you up?
It fills me to the brim.
Mm-hmm. Your heart is very heart centered.
Every day. Yes. I would do it if I could do no other job but coach. For the rest of my life, I'd do it every day, every minute. I would.
I feel the same way.
Right. Yeah, because you want to be with the people. You want to be with your client. I mean, I was sharing with Cindy about grief. I do a lot of grief work, and part about grief work, man, is just being there with the client. You can't make the person come back to life. Really, all this and that, but you're being there with your client, man. And that's the thing about coaching, right? It's just different from all the other paradigms because you're just being there with your client. Yeah,
that's
you're holding
right.
them accountable.
Yes.
Yeah, you're looking at options. Yeah, this and this and this. So, boy, you know, I'm just really on guard for these wannabe therapists, right? Well, you know, they're going to tell these people what to do because they want to be a therapist, but they never had the wherewithal or education to get the therapy license. But they're going to.
And we both know it's two different entirely different professions
exactly.
and skill sets. Yeah, yeah.
And so, I think so. Don't you think sometimes you have to tell clients, I'm not a therapist, I'm a coach, and our jobs are completely different?
Well,
I've had to say that a few times.
Yeah, it's completely different, and you can't practice therapy without a license, so it's illegal. So I think you have to be really clear and refer out
Absolutely.
if people have issues that need to be addressed through therapy or counseling. So yeah, I think it is completely different. But I love what you said, Bruce, just holding space for that client, that being with the client, you're always with that client, and that, you know, time period, you know, like I coach for an hour, most coaches do. I mean, some do shorter. That it's dedicated to them and moving their lives forward. It's a very positive frame if you're coming at it from the right place. And
you know what? We're out of time. I can't believe it.
We are. Darn. Valerie, thank you so much. Tell us how people
how
can
reach you.
Okay, so I can be reached by telephone at 562-449-3365 and by email at ajoyfullifecoach.com.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be
thank
on the
you.
Show with us today.
I really, thank really you. Enjoyed it, so thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. We enjoyed it as well. Okay, so another great... great day on the Concierge Coaches yeah. Show.
You're sounding like me, baby. That's right. You're
taking I know. Like clothes. I'm starting to imitate you. Oh, my All God.
Right.
Oh,
right.
My God.
Just sit back in that chair. You can just close it out.
Yes, indeed. Yes. So, everybody, we're wishing you a really happy rest of your Tuesday. I can be reached at rhythmfoods.com and directly by phone, 714-943-6206. And Bruce, how about you?
Yep, at conciergecoach.net, our at Cameron Coaches. And folks, follow the show on Facebook because we're out there. Concierge Coaches Show. So with that.
And iTunes. On iTunes.
iTunes will play, baby. So we're out there. So thanks for listening again. We'll see y'all next week here on LA Talk Radio's Concierge Coaches Show.
Take care.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Cindy DeFerdinand, only on LA Talk Radio.